Welcome to The Mist, a show about mysterious stuff and me demystifying it. Stuff like drugs, cults, and
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
A few months ago, I went over to Leah's house. She's my occasional producer you met in the first episode.
Oh yes, I'm talking into the thing. This is me and the thing, and we're talking.
We've been friends since we were undergrad religious studies students. Our first class together was on Islam. So I go to her house sometimes just to hang out. We talk about this podcast, have dinner, I catch up with her dog, Chuck. And a few months ago, she told me about a new course she started for her master's program. And just the title got me really excited about it and the potential for this show. Then I checked out the syllabus and I got even more excited. So, I had to go. Pardon?
Thanks. 430, 428, 431. And there's Leah. Hi. I'm good, how are you?
Good.
Why are you acting weird towards a microphone? You've been towards lots of microphones.
Yeah, no, I don't. It doesn't have a light on it.
No, why would it?
Because I can't tell if it's on or not.
You could just assume that it's not on.
Brian's here.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
What are you doing here?
I'm getting ready for class. We're going inside now.
What class is this?
It's a short history of evil.
Cool. What are we doing in this particular class?
Today we're going to talk about Dungeons and Dragons.
How does that pertain to history?
This is a class on the history of evil as it has manifested in popular culture in many cases, or how it has been perceived by others. So we will talk about the game of Dungeons and Dragons and also the response to it.
So today, obviously, we're working on Dungeons and Dragons. Yippee! Very exciting.
That's the course professor, Dr. Drew Thomases.
You can call me Drew, and I'm assistant professor of religious studies at San Diego State University.
He's an interesting guy, a young, trendy-looking academic. He has well-manicured nails, some jewelry, capri-length pants, and stylish shoes with no socks. And it was a rainy Monday evening when I attended this History of Evil course. And as Leah said, this day's class was about the hugely popular tabletop role-playing game, Dungeons and Dragons. D&D to the cool kids. Last year, D&D was inducted to the National Toy Hall of Fame, joining the ranks of Nintendo Game Boy, chess, and the stick. D&D is a cultural phenomenon with a surprisingly divisive history. That's why Professor Drew and these students are examining it, and they're figuring out how the game fits into the history of evil. The class evolved into a discussion about how religious groups reacted to D&D when it became popular in the 80s, and the differences between religion and fantasy.
Right. I found that fantasy games like D&D often can resemble religions, but religious worldviews can also resemble a shared fantasy. Mm-hmm. So this weird blending kind of leads to the reaction from the new religious right, which the authors.
So let's go back even further then, or even more broadly, and instead of asking how people on the Christian right think about the difference between religion and fantasy, why don't we think about what we ourselves think about the difference between religion and fantasy? Is there a difference? Part of me says surely there is, part of me says maybe there isn't, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. There's this idea that fantasy, it allows you to explore the depths of your desires in any direction. Whereas in religion, I think the intention is for betterment at some level. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it's not a matter of fake or not a matter of real or unreal. It's a matter of right and wrong. Yeah. Right.
Well,
yeah. Absolutely.
Brian, who we met just a bit ago, has been playing Dungeons & Dragons since he was young, and he mentioned during this class that one time he and his friends were playing Dungeons & Dragons in public, and this stranger just came up to them and stopped them while they were playing to warn them of the harm that could come from this game, like real harm and evil that could infect his life from playing D&D. Drew wanted him to explore that further.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fair. So I think, Brian, that next time you're playing Dungeons and Dragons and someone comes up to you and says, you know, you should be careful, then you should really engage them in a conversation. And not, I know it's hard, and I'm not saying you should, surely shouldn't tell them off. And you can say, fine, thank you, but you should say, okay, that's great. I want to know exactly why. Is it the die? What exactly is it that I'm doing that's going to conjure demons? I would like to honestly know the answer to that.
That's an interesting point. I mean,
it's like, call me Trisha's Sunday, brother.
No, but that's the thing. You say no. You say no. You say, I will.
Okay, so before we go any further, I have to explain the game. Because aside from nerdy shit, many people just don't know what's happening during D&D. There are a lot of components, and it takes a lot of time to really, really understand everything. But I'll just try to cover the basics here.
Shouldn't there be a board or some pieces or something to Jenga?
D&D does not have pieces, exactly, or a board. The main things you need to play are some willing participants, paper and pencil, and dice. Each player will have what's called a character sheet, with way more details than you'd probably expect about your fantasy character, and it outlines every part of the character you're playing. Most importantly, it has traits like strength and intelligence, as well as the type of species you are, like a gnome or human. And it has your job, too, like if you're a wizard or a warrior. So one player takes on the role of an omnipotent deity for this fantasy world. They're called the Dungeon Master, and they describe where you are and what you're doing. They control the monsters and the strangers that you meet in the game, and they can set you on missions and quests. So based on what the Dungeon Master tells you is happening, you figure out what you want to do from there. And you can check your character sheet to see what you can do, like jump really high or throw really far. Then you roll your dice to see if you actually do it. If the Dungeon Master decides you rolled high enough to, say, shoot an orc in the face with an arrow, then you did. The Dungeon Master effectively leads the game, setting goals and priorities, such as defeating a bunch of orcs. But you don't play D&D to win, or to come in first, second, or third. The game ends when you've completed everything the Dungeon Master has set for you to do. You sort of win as a team. And this is generally done sitting around a table. Everyone has their dice and their character sheets on hand. Your imagination and ability to tell a story fills in the gaps and helps move things along. So that's the gist. Sound evil? I sat down with Professor Drew to talk about it and why he dedicated a class to this game.
What we do then, of course, is we explore the various ways in which different people call other people or things or ideas evil. And we kind of test and investigate the implications of what that means. The classic example that is pretty relevant to kind of contemporary American politics is Islam. The idea that Islam is evil. The idea that gays are evil. What you see there, in the case of Dungeons and Dragons, is that there was this massive moral panic in the 1980s on the part of any number of groups, but largely evangelical Christians, in thinking that role-playing games, and especially Dungeons and Dragons, was a kind of a route to the occult, basically, that through playing Dungeons and Dragons, you are slowly taking the path of the devil. Well, it's always about pop culture because it's always about the youth, right? So if the youth get too excited about a thing, then all of a sudden, if it seems that it might compromise a person's ability to kind of be with God, be with Jesus, go to church, be with their family, then that's a problem.
Not too long ago, D&D grew to be a bigger problem than just family time. In the 80s, the game was linked to a series of tragic deaths, and sometimes totally blamed for them.
James Allen Kirby, 14 years old, charged with killing his junior high school principal and wounding three other people. Police are blaming D&D. Jeffrey Jaklovich, 14. Stephen Loyacano, 16. Michael Dempsey, 17. And the list goes on. He has been studying the game for several years and says there are 28 deaths related to Dungeons and Dragons in the last 5 years.
In some of those, it was clearly the decisive element. In other ones, it was just a major element in the thinking of the people at the time they committed suicide or murder.
This curse he had received in the game that day that he died.
The curse that was placed on Binks' D&D character began, "Your soul is mine. I choose the time." In a letter that he left, Binks said he had been summoned to kill himself because he was evil.
It was obvious through his writings that he felt he had assumed this character, but what I couldn't get into my mind...
There was a lot of coverage around Dungeons & Dragons and these young deaths at the time. One woman whose child killed himself formed an anti-D&D group called BADD, that's B-A-D-D. It stands for Bothered About Dungeons & Dragons. She started investigating death similar to her son's and tried to support law enforcement as an expert. But there was debate that she was not an expert, and that parents like her and investigators and the media were sensationalizing D&D rather than focusing on the victim's psychological issues. So D&D opponents like this said the subject matter of the game, which uses a lot of magic and sorcery and violence, was what led their kids to even consider taking lives. The game can involve dark imagery, like characters being cursed, having their lives threatened. If you're a character in D&D, you can die. But you can also just start up again as a new character. You get a new character sheet, you figure out what your stats are, and you resume playing. Opponents said spending so much time dedicated to this stuff led to involvement in things related to Satanism and cults, groups widely considered evil.
Is there anything that you think is evil?
No. I have thought about this a lot. So my argument is that when a person decides that a thing is evil, then it's easy to disavow, throw away, and then no longer consider. Just say, okay, that thing's evil. I don't have to engage with it in any way. So for me, the most extreme example, which of course is almost everyone's most extreme example, is Hitler, right? So is Hitler evil? The question there is, what do we get out of calling Hitler evil? Versus what do we get out of calling Hitler really, really, really bad? My argument is that by saying that Hitler is evil, then we get to discard him and say, well, you know, that was something else. That's not usual. That's not a part of humanity or politics or ideology. That's something altogether separate. And we can't handle it, deal with it, or even think about it, really. This is not to excuse Hitler. Rather, it's to engage with Hitler more seriously. To demystify it, to understand what it is, to understand the dynamics of his people, but also to understand why the word evil itself was used. So what does calling Hitler evil do for a community of people, you know?
In the case of D&D in the 80s, calling the game evil by parents and concerned parties seemed like a warning label, a label that was brighter and louder than just really bad. And like Drew said, a label that means just stay away, don't even mess with it, don't have any contact. Worry over Satanism and cults was prevalent at this time, affecting the US and Western Europe. It was so big, it got a name. Satanic Panic. It became a pattern of events that put parents and law enforcement on high alert.
The second level would be those that are involved for spiritual reasons, and they recognize that there's power in the worship of Satan. These people generally worship together and try to find the mystery of it all. And then the third level would be criminal involvement, and that's the area that interests us. These people actually believe that they gain power through criminal activity, through killing people, through various rituals that are against the
modern Satanism was formed in the 60s in San Francisco by a guy named Anton LaVey, and it still exists today. But the Church of Satan as it is now appears to have structure and order, unlike a lot of the anarchy stirred by the Satanic Panic. Satanists have rules in place to guide followers, including explicit instruction not to harm children or animals.
Shem Hamfarash!
Shem Hamfarash!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
The events that stoked so much panic to warrant its own name was beyond this order, and ended in people, mostly young people, committing acts that explicitly broke those rules, like killing animals and people. But there were smaller grievances too, like defacing graves and public spaces. It was just anarchy and rebellion with mild ties to the idea of Satanism, which is closely associated with witchcraft. And this is similar to many major religions in history, and now, that have been distorted from the original intent. Violence in the name of a religion that explicitly teaches nonviolence. But all of that rebellion and violence got thrown in with Dungeons & Dragons, partly because its stories use a lot of magic and fighting.
Who was that?
That was Venger, the force of evil. I am Dungeon Master, your guide in the realm of Dungeons & Dragons.
So I'm going to play Dungeons & Dragons for the first time on Sunday.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's really
Thanks.
Exciting. That is, I mean, I honestly, so
Drew
I Drew
said
playing,
that from all the research he's done about D&D, he understands how fun it can be, but still hasn't had the chance to play. Growing up, he was more into Magic the Gathering, so he's jealous that it sort of passed him by.
Because it seems so fun. So fun.
Yeah. I got one whole gold piece.
Just one.
And that's it. That's it.
You can't do that.
What?
What is that?
Don't worry about it.
That's my dungeon master, Brittany. She's the most passionate person I know about Dungeons & Dragons, so I asked her what her favorite thing is about the game.
Oh my god. Okay, buckle up. I'm gonna really go on this one. Well, there's a lot of things. They all kind of have to do with each other. Community building is a huge one for a lot of people. Dungeons & Dragons creates a really safe place to, in a weird way, like, be yourself by role-playing or explore versions of yourself by having these different avatars that you are playing.
God damn it. God, this really puts a wrench in the gears. Did you guys find anything else in the temple?
Three things.
We found the book.
The book?
The book.
Well, it's a book. We don't know.
Well, yeah, we don't know if it's
what
the book.
What book?
The Clidonomicon.
The Clidonomicon. We just named it that. We don't know
right
what the real
here.
Name is. We
she
can't speak real.
She pulls the book out. She, like, bubbles that, too. Each time she bubbles something, she looks pretty, like...
It was a total coincidence that I got roped into this game with her at all, or that I'm playing D&D at all. She happened to tattoo my brother for a lot of hours and talked his ear off about Dungeons & Dragons. So when she wanted to start her own campaign and lead it as the Dungeon Master, my brother and I joined. Campaigns can take a long time and a lot of commitment. We've been at it almost weekly for a few months now, but some campaigns can last years.
She, like, puts them, she kind of brings her hands together, but the bubbles don't touch, and she goes like this, and then they're like, they're away.
I don't think anybody is inherently evil. I think that's, you know, that's a very fantastical fantasy thing. I started thinking about that more when friends of mine would play, like, evil characters. People do evil things, but I don't think there's really such thing as an evil person. You know, imagine playing an evil character.
Yeah.
What are your goals? What is going to dictate your behavior? Are you just going to go and, like, stab everybody? We couldn't do that because then that wouldn't be a very fun game, would it? I think it's about being able to interact with other people that you actually can become pretty close with. And, you know, you're role playing, you're talking to each other, you're problem solving and looking at problems from different perspectives while in that mindset. And I think that's amazing. I hear a lot of people say it helps them with social skills, with their anxiety. It's helped me with anxiety. Playing D&D has helped me out of a depression. Like, I was grieving the loss of a friend that died very suddenly, and that getting together with my group of friends once a week and taking your mind away from, you know, it's not the same as, like, running from your problems, you know? Like, you plan and you sit down, you enjoy your friends, you talk, you laugh, you're storytelling together. You know, it's, I don't know, there's just some, I'm kind of hitting all over the place, but those are all the good things that I feel about D&D.
No,
Yes, I would like an ale and your finest rumors, please.
One rumor,
please. Nice.
Oh, I get it. I was like, what?
Huh?
So it's like, I don't know about rumors.
Oh, but, okay. Yeah, I thought
we our DM needs more beer.
Oh, more beer.
We could have a beer.
We ran out.
Break. We were thinking of like running back.
Should we go get more beer? Yeah. I think we should. Yeah.
Although I will need more beer after this beer, so we should probably get more beer.
Okay. So it's about 7:10 right now. Do you guys feel good playing till like 8:30 or 9?
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Okay.
The Mist is by me, Nate John. My editing dream team is Leo Castaneda and Emily Burns, producing help in this episode by Leah Gregory. As always, please rate and review this podcast. It's a huge help to me, along with sharing the show in any way you can, on Twitter, Facebook, email, or you can just steal your friends' phones and subscribe for them. You're really doing them a favor. And of course, please rate and review The Mist on iTunes or wherever you get free podcasts like it. You can do that on an iPhone by going to the podcast app. On the bottom right, hit search, type in The Mist, this show, then hit review. The 30 seconds it takes you to do that means a lot to me, so thank you. One reviewer wrote, "With The Mist, you engage in topics you've wondered about but might have been apprehensive to explore." And that's totally my goal. Thank you, reviewer Chap JN. So go ahead and throw your review in there as well. I'd love to read it on the show. Links are in the show notes, including one for Venture Maidens. That's the D&D podcast by my dungeon master, Brittany. It's the only D&D podcast I've found that features an all-female cast. Also, there's a link to the Adventure Zone podcast. It's the most entertaining way I was able to pick up the flow of D&D. It's really entertaining. I promise you will love it. Thanks for playing along in this episode. I'll see you next time.